I'm telling these tears, go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames. Freedom, freedom, I can't move.
What is freedom, up, Wisconsin? How y'all doing today? Bright and shiny, but cool outside. Lovely day to be broadcasting from the beautiful downtown studios of Civic Media, the WAUK. I'm here with Brian Kelly, producing as always. Again, I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Really excited to announce, perhaps more officially today, talked about it a little bit yesterday, starting next Monday. As I was sitting around thinking about, geez, what are these months leading up to the big November 5th election going to be like? And we've heard from so many of you about wanting to hear not just the criticisms of Donald Trump and some of the meat on the bones there. You know, as we move forward, I think looking at what Donald Trump says and what his proposals are, though, in my experience, I have yet to find any proposal for a second Trump term other than basically a dictator day one and trying to deport and lock up until they can be deported over 11 million people, which would be, you know, weird. Other than those two things, I haven't heard a lot from the former MAGA president about exactly what his policy proposals are. So again, as I've been sitting here thinking and talking with Brian and others here at Civic Media, and certainly having heard from each and every one of you, it sort of popped into my head, well, listen, each day I should start talking about either what President Biden is proposing, a specific policy that he's proposing for his second term, or I should be looking at what President Biden has accomplished, a particular policy or program, an executive order, a combination of legislation and all those things, specific policies that President Biden has accomplished in his past term that impact each and every one of you and me and my family. So we're calling it Biden's Top 100, and starting June 3rd, each week there will be a policy theme. We're going to go right to the belly of the beast week one and talk about the economy and taxes. But each week there'll be a policy theme or a topic theme. And then each day I will take on and talk about a particular policy, either passed or proposal for his second term of President Biden's. We'll talk about how it impacts you and your family. I hope you all like it. But listen, it's often, you know, Brian and I will talk about what's going to be on the show. But the best source of what we should be talking about and your thoughts about these different policies isn't me or Brian or anyone here at Civic, it's you. And so I want to invite each and every one of you listening, and please share it with your friends and family if they're listeners, or tell new listeners about it, not just to go get the app for free from your favorite app store, not just to listen to the Maggie Dawn show from 2 to 4 p.m. every day. All those things are good. But to go to civic.audio/taxes. Civic.audio/taxes. Brian's going to put that in the show notes for today, which you can find at civicmedia.us. But if you go to civic.audio/taxes, you're going to be able to tell us what you think a fair tax system should be. What do you think the key elements there are? It's an open-ended question. We want to hear anything and everything that you think about how a tax system should be structured. You can talk about corporate tax. You can talk about income tax. And next week, we've got a ream of experts lined up, hoping to have one each and every day to help us understand what our tax system is currently, what some of Donald Trump's tax cuts actually did, and what President Joe Biden's changes to that tax system have accomplished this past three plus years now for the middle class, and what he proposes to do with the tax system going forward. Again, we want to hear from you. You can participate each week. We're going to try to tease a question that's about the next week's topic so that you can participate. You can become part of our conversation, not just by calling and texting during the show, but by helping us understand how these things have impacted you. And that's not all. We're not just going to use this survey tool, but starting next week during our conversation, I'll be giving you a phone number that you can call in and leave us information about how President Biden, how his policies, how his decisions have impacted you and your family. So we're going to have a couple of different ways for you to interact. This is going to be, again, this series of episodes and segments is going to be called Biden's Top 100. It's going to be each and every day for 100 days, minus my vacation in August, of course, each and every one of 100 days leading up to the election. This is going to be the affirmative case, in my opinion, for Joe Biden. And great, disagreement, that's welcome too. Let's dig into these things. Let's understand what each of these presidential candidates actually proposes to do and what their track records are in terms of what they've accomplished for you and your family. I don't know about you, Brian. I'm excited. It's going to be a lot of work.
It's going to be a lot of work. We do have people helping us out here. And the coolest thing, what I'm really excited about is that each and every one of you who listens to this show and participates and does want to make the case for Joe Biden, you will have at your fingertips the case for Joe Biden. You'll have the receipts right in front of you. You can go and check on any policy right in front of you and go, this is what it is. And you can know, because we are double checking on all of this. We are making sure that this is completely verified. Everything is backed up. Everything is researched. And you can just make your case with facts.
Imagine that. I mean, so exciting to me. Again, a little spooked about the work. We don't want to get anything wrong. We want to get every single fact exactly right so that we can help each and every one of you understand. And if you want to talk to your friends and family about politics, I encourage everybody to do so, whether it's on a bar stool or on a picnic bench. Have the conversations. You'll have some information here. Really, really excited to bring this to you. Again, next week's topic is going to be the economy all week long. We're going to drill down a bit on taxation. So our question for each and every one of you to let us know what you think about what makes the tax system fair. It sounds like it should be simple. Rich people pay more. Corporations should pay a good amount if they're raking in the dough. But the how about these things really matters, and it is admittedly extremely complicated. Now, Brian, just one thing I'll note. I'm pretty sure we actually do have the phone number. I think it's floating around somewhere. If you could maybe give a hand in tracking that down, because if you would like to start to leave messages about different policies under Joe Biden and how they've affected your family, you can call that number and leave us a voicemail message. You will use some of that on the air. So you're going to be able to interact during the show. Again, this starts on Monday, June 3rd. It will be every day when I'm in the host chair, along with a couple of guest hosts. We'll cover this as well. Next week's topic is going to be the economy. You can tell us what you think right now by going to civic.audio/taxes. We want to know what you think about what makes a tax system fair. We're going to have that number for you to call. Leave us a voicemail if you know of a specific policy that Joe Biden has adopted and it's impacted your family and you want to share that. We'll take a listen there as well. So lots to look forward to. That's going to kick off on Monday, June 3rd. It won't be the only thing I'm talking about on the show because, I mean, Trump's going to say some crazy stuff, I'm guessing, between now and November 5th.
News does happen.
News does happen. We'll always cover the news. I probably will talk about the Brewers some more because I just can't help myself. So don't worry. It'll be, you know, what you've been come accustomed to here on the Maggie Dawn show. But I'm excited. Again, lots of work, a little bit scared about the volume of work, but we're going to do it.
I think it's going to be great. I'm really excited to do the work and I'm excited to be a part of it. It's a great plan. I'm excited to be a part of it. And by the way, wasn't that a great Brewers game last night? I thought it was awesome.
Oh, it was. Listen, if you enjoy baseball, yesterday's game was amazing. The weather was stinky. Trying to get in and out of the stadium must have been a bear. Civic Media Zone Aaron Carreno was at the game with one of his buddies. I'm sure they got soaked on their way in and out. That's where you want to take those shuttles to the game. That's where you want to park and ride. Get dropped off 50 feet.
The problem is waiting for the shuttles on the way out. You will be waiting in the rain.
Yeah.
Just to let everybody know, quick update here. That phone number to call in on the topics, 608-688-9797. 608-688-9088. Once again, it's 608-688-9088.
So for next week, if you want to give that number a call, let us know how Joe Biden's policies have helped your family financially. Yes, we're going to talk about the fact that we're still seeing high food prices. Well, why is that? We're going to talk about greedflation. We're going to talk about shrinkflation. We're going to have experts here to help us all understand it. Most importantly, I think, is digging in on this question about tax policy. And what exactly did Donald Trump do? What did he do alone? What didn't he really do alone? What did he need Congress for? How does Joe Biden, how has he managed the federal tax system, both on the corporate and individual tax basis? So again, civic.audio/taxes. You can answer the question, what do you think? How do you think a tax system should be structured? How should it work? And if you want to leave us a message, voicemail letting us know how Biden's pandemic relief plan, ARPA, the PPP, all these different programs to help keep middle-class Americans afloat coming out of the pandemic, you can call us and leave us a voicemail at 608-688-9088. All right, now on to the business of the day. First, got to have one of our most favorite peoples on the horn. We're going to have to take a couple of really quick messages. Kurt from Madison already on the horn. We'll take Kurt's call. If you want to call or text us in this show about today's topics, 855-752-4842. Samuel Alito not going to recuse himself, but boy, did he say some interesting stuff. We'll get to that. And I'll talk about jury deliberations in Trump's hush money trial. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
Keep on running, cause the winner don't quit on themselves.
Nobody knows more about taxes than
I've been a bad, bad girl, just to ask Tori Amos. I'm Maggie Dawn. I'm a nasty woman every day on the radio. I always welcome your participation. You can join our conversations, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. I'm going to get to Alito's letter that he sent to Congress explaining, of course, I'm not recusing myself from the January 6th cases. Why would I do that? There's not an appearance of bias. But first, let's take one of our regular callers and listeners. Kurt from Madison, you're on. How are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing well. I'm enjoying the weather, walking my dog.
Beautiful. So, what you got for us?
Can I respond to the tax question?
Yeah.
Boy, there's just so many to pick and choose from, but to grab one, I would say impact on infrastructure. And let's just pick on Bezos. As he becomes bigger and bigger and he uses more and more resources, let's just look at vehicles and road use, he should have to start paying more and more taxes because we are presently paying for the bulk of that. He's paying very little of that. So if he wants to create this behemoth system and constantly eat up more and more of the resources that we have to use in parallel to him, then let's start taxing him on it.
Yeah, Kurt, it's a great, great point. What Kurt's talking about are specific use taxes that on occasion, they can be in the form of fees, licensing costs, or explicit use taxes that are generally directed at for-profit businesses that use public infrastructure that we taxpayers pay for. I'm well familiar with what I would call road engineering, street and highways, and the speed at which it degrades, not as a road or highway engineer, but because I worked on a project when I was at the city of Milwaukee that dealt with a joint recycling facility that the city of Milwaukee built in cooperation and partnership with the city of Madison. And one of the things that we had to account for in the cost structure was, okay, this is going to wear down the roads surrounding the recycling center at a much faster rate after it is built relative to what was there previous. So how should those costs be shared, or profits or revenues returned to those jurisdictions reduced? How do we know who's producing more waste, et cetera, et cetera? So that's a big question. Yeah, thinking about fees and use taxes and who's using the infrastructure and are they for profit or to whose benefit, all those things. Yeah, literal conversations about taxation systems have incredible, seemingly infinite levels of complexity. But again, at base, take your shot at it. Pick one element of a tax system that you find interesting. Let us know how you think it should be structured. civic.audio/taxes. We're going to get into that next week. I wanted to start today on the substantive stuff by talking about the fact that, Justice Alito telling Congress there's nothing to see here. Now, in case, again, you've been living under an enormous sized boulder or rock for the last few weeks, two things came out. Now, this is in addition to reporting that's been out for months and months about incredibly lavish vacations that Samuel Alito took that happened in 2008. Vacation one, a fishing trip, very, very luxe. And his sponsor on that fishing trip was a billionaire. Now, this billionaire then proceeded to have many cases that came before the Supreme Court that culminated in a case years after this luxurious fishing trip. And, you know, the Supreme Court found in the billionaire's favor, ended up pocketing around $2.4 billion. Now, some people would call that a conflict of interest, especially considering that Justice Alito seemingly forgot to note that on his economic gift disclosures that year. Weirdest thing. I have so many vacations, I forget the ones that are freebies, must be the explanation. Much like his fellow compatriot on the court, Justice Thomas. But we're not talking about that. We're talking about the two flags of flying outside of the not one, but two Alito family homes. The first was the upside down American flag. The other is the pine flag. Both of these basically correlated with the January 6th insurrectionists. So to be clear, Justice Alito, in front of not one, but two of his homes, had a January 6th pro-Trump flag flying. This is not appropriate. Justices are not supposed to engage in overt political activity like this. But don't worry, it's his wife's fault. Just ask him. He again, in a letter to Democratic leaders in the House and the Senate, Justice Alito said that the first flag and a second religious themed flag, this is the pine tree flag. Again, it's religious, Christian nationalist, but also affiliated with the insurrectionists, were raised by his wife without his knowledge, and that the incidents do not meet the conditions for recusal outlined in the Supreme Court's code of conduct. He disclosed for the first time, and this one I find particularly rich, that he was not aware of the upside down American flag until it was called to his attention, and that his wife initially resisted taking it down.
Now, look. If you don't know what an upside-down American flag means, and it means something with January, okay, that's fine. But in general, I'm a Boy Scout. I was a Boy Scout. Maybe I didn't make Eagle Scout. I was very close. But I do know that proper flag procedure is not upside down. And I would think that the flag nuts would be all over this, but no.
Would you be surprised to find out that He was actually on active duty training for a while.
Huh.
So, and by some of my reading, I believe he actually served in the sort of subset that actually is responsible for like putting the flag up and down. I think he was in ROTC or something like that when he was at Princeton.
All I know is that as far as like basic training is, it's, you know, flag 101 is part of the training.
Part of the deal. Oh, and it was, I have to correct myself. It's a small tangent. That was Fiona Apple, not Tori Amos. I love them both dearly.
They are fantastic.
They are fantastic. So he, again, he didn't see the flag. Wait a minute. You're driving in and out of your house in Arlington, Virginia, and you don't notice that the flag is not raised properly.
You presume too much that he was driving.
Well, fair point. All of that is, of course, horse pucky and observably untrue, because he admitted that his wife flew it in retort or in response to neighbors that were aggressively anti-Trump. So you pick that one, that symbol randomly. It just, none of this carries. So one, it's my wife's fault. Two, well, I didn't really know what it means, but maybe I did or she did, but I didn't see it. And then I asked her to take it down and she told me to go kick rocks. Here's what he writes. As soon as I saw it, I asked my wife to take it down, but for several days she refused. That nasty woman. His wife, he added, has the legal right to use the property as she sees fit. There were no additional steps I could have taken to have the flag taken down more properly. Wow. No wonder Samuel Alito's anti-woke. Listen, women need to get back to those 18th, 19th century values. How dare you, woman? Play. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back in just a moment. Your farm update is next. Don't worry, I'll spend a little bit more time on Justice Alito. Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. We're going to talk a little Trump hush money trial this half hour. I got to finish up on Samuel Alito. Because of course he's not recusing himself from the two January 6th criminal prosecutions that are pending before him. Two of the most important cases that the Supreme Court will decide this term, certainly from a historical perspective. Justice Alito sent a letter to Congress, specifically to Democratic leaders in the House and Senate, that said basically, oh, no. That was my wife with the flags. I didn't even know about them. Oh, and when I asked her to take them down, she blew me off. He also said this. This is according to the Washington Post. In rejecting the lawmaker's request to step aside from the cases related to the 2020 election, Alito wrote that he is, quote, confident that a reasonable person who is not motivated by political or ideological considerations or a desire to affect the outcome of the Supreme Court's cases would conclude that the flag flying at his homes do not require recusal. The man has cojones. I mean, oh, so the only people who would perhaps question your impartiality, and by the way, the rule for the Supreme Court, which was adopted last fall in response to other controversies over the Supreme Court's ethics, again, Justice Thomas coming to mind, says that a justice should disqualify him or herself from cases in which the justice's, quote, impartiality might reasonably be questioned, where an unbiased person familiar with all the facts and circumstances, quote, would doubt that the justice could fairly discharge his or her duties, end quote. I don't know, Brian, you look pretty reasonable to me. Do you just doubt Justice Alito's impartiality?
You know what? I'm going to go back to a good old 90s scholar and refer to the experts on this one.
It depends upon what the meaning of the word is.
Yes.
And I'm going to say,
yes,
depends on what the meaning of the word is. So if you are talking about existence, then I think that perhaps the existence of recusal should happen. But, you know, yeah, I'm just a reasonable guy.
Right. The existence of a reasonable question over Justice Alito's impartiality. It's a reasonable question because you had not one, but two flags flying outside your not one, but two homes that indicated alignment with the MAGA movement and the insurrectionists. And you're now hearing two criminal cases involving said insurrection, sir.
Maggie, you know, just, you know, it's cool. It's totally fine.
It's fine. Just trust me. Just trust me. I'm good. This language really, really makes me angry. He writes, I'm confident that a reasonable person who's not motivated by political or ideological considerations would think this is not a problem. Sir, the question is, are you biased by political or ideological considerations? It's just so brazen. How dare you? How dare you, sir? Have you no shame? And then the second thing he says, oh, unless you're motivated by a, quote, desire to affect the outcome of the Supreme Court cases, oh, only you would find that there's an appearance of bias. Sir, we're concerned that your bias is affecting the outcome of the Supreme Court cases. And again, I read you the Supreme Court rule, again, adopted just this past fall. That says that a justice should recuse when, quote, impartiality might reasonably be questioned, or when a person familiar with all facts and circumstances, quote, would doubt that the justice could fairly discharge his or her duties. We're there. It doesn't matter if Justice Alito, in his subjective viewpoint, doesn't agree. We're there. There's just no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Jean from Eau Claire, you're on the Maggie Dawn Show. What do you have to say?
Well, thank you so much for taking my call. And hello, Brian. It's wonderful to hear your voice again. You know, this was really spoken by a condescending, self-centered, authoritarian judge. I mean, this is just pathetic. Blame the wife. Does she make all his decisions on the bench? We really got to be careful now, because, you know, if his wife was allowed to fly that flag and that's the way she feels, then she could be influencing his decision. So definitely he needs to recuse himself if he, you know, couldn't take down that flag and it was all her fault, and maybe she's sitting on that bench with him. So thank you for taking my call and keep up the great work. Bye.
Thanks, Jeannie. I think Jeannie's got her finger on something quite important here. As a sitting Supreme Court justice, yes, your wife has a right to free speech, but not when it leads to a reasonable person questioning your impartiality, not when it leads to the appearance of bias. She wants to do that. She needs to carry around her own flag by herself, you know, maybe on January 6th with the rest of the people that she so fervently stands with. Disgusting. Charles from Green Bay, what do you have to say?
Hey, great show. Everything is going great. The question I've got is, okay, blame it on the wife. Well, why couldn't he have walked over there and dropped it taken off the pole, or changed it, or turned it right side up? The next thing is, you were talking about taxes a couple minutes ago. You know, I feel the tax situation is going to be horrified, because next year, 2025, the way the Republicans wrote it, my taxes go up, and I'm a middle class, and I'm a senior citizen. I'm on a fixed income. I don't get cost of living raises like Congress people do. It's ridiculous. And those billionaires, hey, most of them want to pay their fair share. Why doesn't Congress let them?
From your mouth to the president's ear, Charles. And we'll talk about exactly what Joe Biden has proposed and has done to allow some of Trump's tax cuts for billionaires and the wealthiest corporations to expire, and what he proposes to do to protect people like Charles in Green Bay. Thanks so much for listening and calling. Please keep doing so, Charles, to protect folks like Charles on a fixed income while raising taxes on the richest of the rich here in the United States. We will talk about all of that starting next week, kicking off on Monday, with Biden's top 100. We'll be talking about a particular policy theme each week and each day, drilling down onto a specific and unique piece of Joe Biden's platform for his second term, or what he's accomplished in the first term. Thanks again, Charles. The Justice Alito thing is beyond. Beyond. He is so arrogant. He's so unself-aware, so the hubris to claim that the only people who could possibly question his impartiality are those that, again, I want to get the language right. Oh, those that are not motivated by political or ideological considerations. You know, the political and ideological considerations that the two flags that your wife flew in front of your two homes represented, those political and ideological considerations, or wait a minute, just the political and ideological considerations that you disagree with, sir. Those. The only people who could question him were those, you know, the political and ideologues that he disagrees with, or those that have a desire to affect the outcome of the Supreme Court's cases. You mean like the guy, the billionaire that bought your fishing trip for $1,000 a night and $200 bottles of wine? Oh, wait, he already did affect the outcome of cases in front of the Supreme Court, including 10 of his own, which ultimately culminated in $2.4 billion more dollars in his pocket. Who does this guy think he is? Just like the president, he's going to declare immune. Apparently, Justice Alito thinks he is accountable to, let's see, his wife.
Maybe not even there. I mean, just look at where the guy came from. Really, I think is what we should do. But seriously, Maggie, Gene hit on something that really I've been, especially going back through sound and cutting a bunch of sound from the MAGA Republicans and just basically people in general and in this campaign, this former administration, they just have an arrogance about them. Where there's them, and then there's the rest of the people. There's the ruling class, and then there's the rest of the people. And it's not like they discuss it in terms of you tiny people here and us over there. They couch it in terms of a given. It's already the people are unruly. You cannot trust the common man to even make a decision, let alone move on. And that's a given, not something they just keep repeating. It's just you can tell within their language they have no respect for the common human being because they just assume we're animals there to consume stuff and give them tax money.
Well, if I can be really blunt about this, there's an underlying current in a lot of what I see and hear from the Supreme Court, as well as MAGA ideologues, and frankly, the Christian nationalist movement, is they feed people sort of these placating pellets that will arouse anger and make those that want to follow them feel good. It's us versus them. Those are the bad people. But what they're never doing is actually responding to the specific issues that affect middle-class people. Oh, I'm going to help the middle class. There's no greater friend to Black people or veterans or the middle class than me. Nobody knows more about taxes than I do. Yeah, but what is it that you know about taxes, sir? What specifically have you done for the Black community or veterans? And when you start to strip back all the fancy sort of misdirection and rhetoric and the nonsense and the big words and all of that. And a lot of the out and out lies, what you end up with, at least in my estimation, often, and what scares me so much, is a movement that is trying to use some of the anxieties that we all share in the middle class to separate people who have so much more in common. And to impose upon us, just middle-class people that go to work every day and want our families to be safe and generally want the same things. They're trying to use lies and rhetoric and oversimplifications to make us think that we actually don't have a whole lot in common. And they get away with it to an extent because, generally speaking, Democratic leaders, and of course there have been corrupt leaders and bad leaders, and you know, Bill Clinton is a rapist, in my opinion. Taking all that for granted, in general, the Democratic Party has always been a big tent party. We engage in disagreements amongst people who tend to be more in alignment. We have these difficult discussions. We don't impose message discipline, right? And people criticize Democrats all the time. No message discipline. We're taking knives to gunfights. Well, part of the Democratic Party is that we acknowledge that there are a lot of differences between people and that everyone has a place here. If we're all trying to work towards a more equitable society, that we all want safety for our families and to be paid a fair wage. And we want a tax system to work predominantly for the middle class. We want clean air and clean water. And we want to be able to camp with our grandkids and for our grandkids to be able to camp with their grandkids and hike, and that there be a beautiful set of natural resources in Wisconsin for that. The reality of the matter is they say and do these things. Oh yeah, presidents can be immune. Oh, there's no conflict of interest, because the democratically appointed Supreme Court justice or a democratically elected president like Joe Biden, we wouldn't worry about him ordering the assassination of Donald Trump. He wouldn't do it. He wouldn't use the military to try to interrupt the peaceful transition of power. We know that. So there's no risk to MAGA Republicans and partisans like Samuel Alito, who are so clearly biased because, frankly, they rely on the goodwill of the Democratic Party not to break the whole system. Huh. I'm out of breath. Well, should we take a couple of minutes? Recombobulate, as is our want here in Wisconsin. I'm going to recombobulate. I'm going to come back. I'm going to tell you where we are in the Trump hush money trial and the absolutely ridiculous thing that his lawyer said during closing arguments. You're not going to want to miss it. I'm Maggie Dawn. My producer is Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Back in just a moment.
Shame on you.
What is going on? I mean, what is going on? This is ridiculous. I mean, the four non-blondes have been asking this since 25 years ago.
And they're still trying to get up that great big hill of what is going on.
What is going on? To get up that great big hill of hope for a destination. I'm Maggie Dawn. He's Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. That's, of course, Four Non-Blondes, a great hit from the mid-90s singing What's Going On. I feel like that today. Samuel Alito has no shame. And certainly, I think he would, you know, not do so well on his basic college admissions tests, like SAT, ACT. Like, define the word bias. Define the word impartiality. I don't think the guy knows what it is. You're only biased if you disagree with him. Well, that's a perfect tautology. It's literally...
Let's have a spelling contest.
Yeah, that's kind of where we're at. But I promise to tell you a little bit about where we are in the Trump voter manipulation trial in New York. Closing arguments were yesterday. The jury has the case. We could have a verdict in 5 minutes, in 5 weeks. No one knows. But briefly, let's just do a quick little recap of what occurred during closing arguments. Now, this is the case. Trump is charged with basically 34 criminal business record manipulation charges in this criminal case. This is the case that has to do with paying off Stormy Daniels so that it wouldn't become public in the time period after the Access Hollywood tape came out, right? That was what kicked off the concern. It was a 5-alarm fire, according to the testimony of one of Trump's aides during this trial, that the Access Hollywood tape set off a 5-alarm fire. He knew, Donald Trump and his campaign knew, they needed the votes of largely suburban white women in order to win. And they were concerned because the Access Hollywood tape, of course, this is where Donald Trump admits to being a serial sexual assaulter, later confirmed by a civil jury that he, in fact, raped E. Jean Carroll. And again, has been credibly accused of rape or other versions of sexual assault by some, I don't know, it's like 15 plus women. So they knew following the Access Hollywood tape, we cannot manage any more bad press about this sort of issue. So when it came about and they heard that Stormy Daniels was about to go public with her story of a one-night stand with Donald Trump, this would not look good. No, 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 this would not play well. So Trump enlisted his fixer, Michael Cohen, longtime lawyer, and David Pecker, the guy that owns the National Enquirer, to catch and kill the story, to pay Stormy Daniels for the story, and then to lock it away in a literal vault so that it wouldn't see the light of day before the election. He ended up not actually making the payment himself. Michael Cohen paid off Stormy Daniels himself. There were then a series of payments from the Trump Organization back to Michael Cohen. All of this amounts to business record fraud and election violations, all sorts of not good things. Now, the defense in its closing arguments basically said, Michael Cohen's the greatest lawyer, greatest lying lawyer, perhaps, of all time. My response to that line from the defense in closing arguments was, well, it would take Donald Trump to no one, wouldn't it? I mean, that's, if I'm a big liar, I'm hiring the liar lawyer. I don't want the honest lawyer. The honest lawyer's not going to let me lie. And if I like to lie, I want the lying lawyer. So I don't know if that's so much of an indictment of one of the star witnesses that'll help Donald Trump. They attacked the evidence as being insufficient. That's probably pretty, it is standard fare. The defense attacked or tried to say that the prosecution was trying to inflame jurors' emotions and that Stormy Daniels should not have testified. Of course, the judge had ruled on that she provided the key context, the factual basis that underlined and kicked off this whole hush money payment. And then, of course, the defense tried to downplay the concern. Now this, if I'm a juror, this is what doesn't sit well with me. What they tried to argue in closing arguments, this is Donald Trump's defense team in the hush money trial, the closing arguments were yesterday, jury has the case. This is what, as a jury, would bug me. There's sort of an unwritten rule about doing trial work. Don't tell jurors, don't try to tell a story that just doesn't make sense. Right? It has to check with a juror's common sense, with their life experience. It has to stitch together. And here's where I think, above all else, the defense fails. They're trying to argue that this was no big deal. Oh, no big deal. It wasn't really about the election. Donald Trump wasn't really worried about this coming out publicly. To which I would respond, are you absolutely kidding me? He was about 3 weeks away from the presidency and Access Hollywood, the tape had come out, roll the audio, where Donald Trump is admitting to being a serial sexual assaulter. The idea that this didn't matter, and oh, by the way, that argument belied by testimony during the trial itself by a former Trump aide. Oh, my goodness. I got to get this from Gary. Gary, you made an interesting point to Brian. Tell all the listeners, tell everybody out there what you think about this.
Wait a minute. I didn't even talk to Brian. I've been sitting on hold. So I know Brian personally, but I didn't talk to him today. And Brian knows me. I'm a conservative. All right?
Yes.
And I listen to you a lot, but I don't call you. I call the other guys. In fact, Dom and I are going out, made a bet with him that Donald Trump will not be found guilty. There may be a hung jury or whatever.
Yeah, hung jury. I'll get to that. I mean, my question, Gary, is would you be comfortable with your daughter or your wife or your mother alone in a hotel room with Donald Trump? Would you be okay with that? Would you feel comfortable about that?
No, absolutely.
Hey, there you have it. Gary, I'm sorry, I'm running out of time. If you hang on, I'll let you get a couple more points in when we come back. We've got news, weather, and sports up next for you. And then I'm going to be joined by the most reasonable man in politics other than David Crowley, Tom Paulswitz, Navy veteran. We'll ask him about what he thinks the former president was talking about in his Truth Social post about Memorial Day, because I can't figure it out. We'll also get a little bit more from Gary from Sussex if he hangs around. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. News, weather, and sports are next.
25 years and my life is still trying to get up that
great big hill of hope for a destination.
Shame, shame.